TED Audio Collective.
Hi, I'm Debbie Millman. Canva is great for designing visual content for work, no matter what industry or department you work in. Nail your next presentation with Canva Presentations. Start with a professionally designed template and use it as a springboard for your design. It's a serious time saver. Time to present but can't be there in person? Enter Canva Talking Presentations. Record yourself presenting and add your talking head to your slides so your audience can watch your perfected presentation anywhere, anytime. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Improv was a really good base for me in the way in which I create now, which is I think I like showing the flaws. You're seeing every time I mess up.
From the TED Audio Collective, this is Design Matters with Debbie Millman. For 18 years, Debbie Millman has been talking with designers and other creative people about what they do, how they got to be who they are, and what they're thinking about and working on. On this episode, Abby Jacobson talks about the importance of making mistakes in the creative process.
Listen, I love Broad City and I love what we put out into the world, but we messed up a lot too.
Who doesn't love to live well? To be perfectly at ease, in comfort and style. Hunter Douglas can help you do just that with their innovative window shade designs, gorgeous fabrics, and control systems so advanced they can be scheduled to automatically adjust to their optimal position throughout the day. There are so many wonderful things about them. Perhaps it's the way the shades diffuse harsh sunlight to cast a beautiful glow across the room, or being able to enjoy the view outside the window while protecting your privacy inside. When you tap into Hunter Douglas's PowerView technology, your shades can be set to automatically reposition for the perfect balance of light, privacy, and insulation, morning, noon, and night. That's what I love the most about them. So live beautifully with Hunter Douglas, enjoying greater convenience, enhanced style, and increased comfort in your home throughout the day. And right now, for a limited time, you can take advantage of generous rebate savings opportunities on select styles. Visit hunterdouglas.com/designmatters for details. That's hunterdouglas.com/designmatters. This is Debbie Millman, and I'm back with a new season of Design Matters. Thank you for your patience during the break, and I hope you enjoyed the archival shows we put in the rotation. In the meantime, I sent my new book into the world. If you're interested, it's called Why Design Matters: Conversations with the World's Most Creative People. I'm excited to get back to having those conversations, and I was excited to go in person to this year's TED conference to interview Abby Jacobson, the co-star and co-creator of the groundbreaking TV show Broad City, and author and illustrator of the book I Might Regret This. But as luck would have it, I got COVID and couldn't go. Fortunately, the show did go on with my friend and fellow podcaster and writer, Dylan Marin, stepping in for me as my guest host. Dylan is an actor, writer, and activist. You may have heard his voice work as Carlos in the podcast Welcome to the Night Vale. He has also hosted his own podcast, Conversations with People Who Hate Me, which he also turned into a marvelous book of the same title. Dylan spoke to Abby Jacobson in front of the live TED audience in Vancouver.
Let us begin
friends, angels, kings. I am so, so, so excited to bring this person up to the stage. You know her as the co-creator and co-star of the incredible television show Broad City. She is the author of the essay collection I Might Regret This, and she is the executive producer and star of the upcoming television adaptation of A League of Their Own. Please welcome Abby Jacobson.
Hi, hi, hi.
Hi, honey. Welcome to the stage.
Thanks. This is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. You look amazing.
You look amazing.
Great.
Too.
Okay. I just said it for the compliment back.
I know. I know.
So
you did.
I ignored. I was like, I'll say whatever.
And you do look amazing. Though.
Thank you.
I mean,
that's
it.
What matters.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're not a stranger to TED.
No, I'm not.
Take us there.
It's very bizarre for me to be sitting on any stage here.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah.
So my first job in New York was uploading a TED Talk for a company that TED hired. It was two guys and me, and I uploaded TED Talks in 2006.
Whoa.
And tracked the analytics of those talks.
How were the analytics?
They're good.
Okay.
They're pretty solid analytics. I was not great at my job, and I didn't work there that long, but
okay.
I have a deep history of TED, and my dad used to come very early on. He was like an OG TEDster.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how did that job end?
I was fired.
Okay.
I was fired.
Okay, and now take that. Here we are.
Here we are. So guys,
yeah.
Look, you never know.
If you're fired from TED, you can create an amazing television show on Comedy Central and be here.
It was meant to happen that way.
Abby, my love, my friend. We're dating now. the fact checkers start spiraling.
This is our announcement.
This is our announcement. We are dating.
Yep.
I want to take you back to the 90s.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, The Bodyguard is the movie of the moment.
Okay. Yep.
Mm-hmm. There is a young Abby Jacobson. Okay. Picture her. Love her. We love her. She's writing a letter to Lorne Michaels. What?
Oh man, you've done some.
I did the research.
Okay. Yeah.
But okay. She's writing a letter to Lorne Michaels, the head of Saturday Night Live. Tell us what that letter says.
Studio 8H.
You addressed it to Studio 8H?
I think I did.
Okay, great.
I was really, really into SNL. I think my parents, that was like the show I was sometimes allowed to watch as a kid. That's all I wanted to do was, Gilda Radner was like the person for me.
Yeah.
Gilda Live aired on Comedy Central, which is very full circle because my show ended up being on Comedy Central. All these full circle moments,
full
guys.
Full circles,
okay.
Ted gets fired, come back, Gilda.
But I wrote Lauren a letter that was so sort of, not aggressive, but maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
That was like, you better watch out because I'm going to be there. And I think I made a bet with my brother that I was going to get on SNL by the time I was 20.
Wow.
And I
20?
Haven't paid him that $100 yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was probably like 10.
Yeah, when you're 10, 20 is the oldest age.
20
that you can
and
fathom.
$100
yeah.
is the most money
yeah,
and
rich
the oldest.
And the
yes.
oldest.
I was like,
yeah,
this
I'm going to be
happen.
On it.
Yeah.
But by the age of 20, wow. that's precocious, and I'm proud of you
yeah,
for that.
I mean, it didn't happen. So
okay,
yeah.
But a lot of amazing things happen. We're going to get to it. So how do you go from writing that letter to Lorne, a threatening letter that could have gotten you arrested, and then you go to MICA? The Maryland Institute College of Art.
Yeah.
Those words don't, Institute College of Art kind of.
There's a missing O.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
A strong missing O. I Googled it so many times because I was like, I must be getting the wrong pages.
Kind of throwaway.
Yeah. But you went to MICA.
I went to MICA.
What brought you there?
Okay, so my parents are both artist, so I grew up in a household of visual art. Mm-hmm. My mom was a potter growing up, and my dad was a graphic designer, hence him being an early Tedster. And my brother actually now run, and my dad have a design firm together in Philadelphia. And so that was sort of like the obvious choice was the arts. But when I was a kid, as I said, I was really into SNL and comedy, and I'm gonna take us around. Mike Myers was, I was very into Mike Myers, especially his Coffee Talk.
Yeah.
Which was Linda Richman based on his mother-in-law. And I used to do that in school a lot, and I took acting classes, but like this, what I do now was never really a thing I thought was a possible career.
Yeah.
Because no one I knew did any, like what is that trajectory? I just was not on the, in my mind that this was a possibility. So the arts, you know, it's so easy to become a successful artist. But I was very good at drawing, and it's sort of like that was all I did as a kid, and I sort of could see the results in school. I was in my public high school outside Philly had a really great art program, and I sort of like was always in that department with those teachers, and they sort of took a liking to me, and so that trajectory sort of seemed like the way to go. And I looked at a lot of schools, but MICA in Baltimore wasn't that far from Philly, and it seemed like it had a great program. And
And you went?
I went. I was general fine arts, so mostly drawing and painting. But then they had just started their video department.
Oh, did you take classes?
Yes.
Wow.
And so I was one of the first video minors there, but I kind of just ended up doing these characters that would have just been like on SNL. But
if you had gotten on by the age of 20, won that $100.
But at MICA, it was so interesting. They projected them in a gallery. So it was kind of this interesting thing. I moved to New York after that and sort of kept going in the acting world, but I was kind of doing it already at MICA, just in a
different,
a little bit of a, like venue, a higher brow way.
Yeah. It's always like when you get like Cindy Sherman, you know, when you get a Cindy Sherman, you're like, oh, am I smart enough to understand this? Whereas like if you saw it on YouTube, you'd be like, I get it.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has a very high low to it.
Yeah. Whenever I go to MoMA, I'm like, I'm dumb. So that's my takeaway when I see fine art.
Well, you know, not to pitch my own podcast.
Good setup.
Or maybe you were leading there.
Yeah.
But I did a podcast with MoMA.
Piece of work.
A piece of, well, you know.
With WNYC Honeycomb Production. I know. I did my research.
This is hilarious. Yeah. We just met.
Yeah,
and I
we
love
just
it.
Met. But I really, I
but
just.
It did, it, the whole intention was sort of like making art accessible to people that feel like they don't understand what it is.
Okay, I need to listen to that podcast.
Yeah, and it's just sort of approaching it with curiosity, and it was pretty incredible working with MoMA. I got to go in to the museum after hours.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
Mrs. Basilie Frankweiler. Yeah, you had the sleepover at the museum.
Oh, I don't understand that
I'm just saying words, and you're like, okay, Dylan is unwell. Okay, but you, after college, you move to New York for the Atlantic Acting School.
I did, which is Mamet's.
Yeah.
Mamet's and William H. Macy's acting school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you took what you learned from the videos, and you were like, I like this feeling, I'm going to go towards it.
I think it was sort of always what I kind of wanted to do as a kid. Mm-hmm. And then felt that was impossible.
Yeah.
And then my video stuff I got some good feedback at MICA from it, and I was like, let me just go for this. And I moved up to New York and went to Atlantic Theater Conservatory program for about a week.
Can you take us through that week? We have to hear.
It's so, it's such a serious place.
Yeah.
And I think I still am very interested in the art of acting, but I think I lean more, I definitely like how I came to it through comedy.
Yeah.
But this was like full on, it was so serious. Everyone felt very heavy.
Yeah.
I was very in my head, and I know all these anyone that's acting, like repetition and scene study and analyzing a scene and sort of like, well, what are you really saying when you're saying this? And I, all very valid if that's how your mind works. It was paralyzing to me.
Yeah, I totally get it.
And I quit. I had to make a decision, you know, when you like you sign up for this long thing and then they're like, you have 7 days to, if you don't like it, you've got to do it or you're going to lose your deposit. And I was like, I don't think this is for me. And at the time I'd moved up to New York with my friend from college, Jess, and I was like going through it and she was like, have you ever been to the UCB, the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York? I think like based on your video stuff, you would like it. And I hadn't. And I went by myself to see an improv show.
Yeah.
I have no idea what show it was, what they were even doing, but I was just fully taken.
Yeah.
And I was like, that.
That's what I want
to do. Not this, that.
Was just because I'm curious, because I think like stories are so simple in retrospective narration, you know, and like I left the Atlantic and walked right over to the UCB and it's like, no, there was like terror in that time.
No, I had a full breakdown on 15th Street and 9th Avenue. Yeah, I know the corner well.
Yeah. In the vicinity of the Atlantic Acting School. Yeah.
Right nearby. Right, no, cause I felt, I moved to New York to do this.
Yeah.
And I guess I can't.
Right.
Like I even said this to you 20 minutes ago where I was like, I mean, I am an actor, but like, I'm not, that's not like what I,
right.
But I fully am an actor and I can't own it because I think that, partially because maybe that experience, but I always go writer first. It makes me feel way more comfortable. Yeah. And
so you never say artist. You never say I'm.
Sometimes I say artist.
Yeah.
My little name tag has a lot of things on it because I wasn't sure how to label myself. Yeah.
Same. Like on my IRS forms, it's like a new thing each year.
Yeah.
It's like whatever earned me enough money that year. I'm like, writer. You know?
Exactly.
We talked about this, but people kind of identify you by the software that you use to, like, you know, to be called a YouTuber. And
exactly.
It's like, no, that's just the software I use.
Exactly.
Okay, so this next part of the story, many of us know well. If you're not up on the broad city lore.
I don't know if this crowd knows well.
No one knows this at all.
Just and we're gonna take a long shot. Not sure this crowd.
Blank faces. Of just
I know,
like,
it's like, okay. Yeah,
just shapes that they're seeing on stage. Okay, this next part of the story, I know well, and I would
there's
like
a couple.
To.
I can tell. There's like, I can feel there's like a couple.
There's a few broad city heads.
It's okay, it's okay.
Broad
Thanks,
city.
Guys.
I'm a Broad City head, so I will say I know this next part of the story well. And I'll just say, on a personal note, you know, I was coming up around the time that Broad City was transitioning from web series to television show, and I remember that offered such a beacon of hope for me and so many friends, because it was like, I don't know, there was like this air of possibility in that you could like make something that you believed in and do it. So,
oh, I love hearing that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was really, really cool. But I know this next part of the story well, which is that you meet Alana Glazer at McManus, a bar frequented by UCB improvisers. And here's how you write about this moment. It feels false to look back on a moment, a conversation, and see an inciting incident of your own life's movie, like a formulaic Hollywood script broken down beat by beat in a screenwriting handbook. But those handbooks sell so many copies for a reason. It was right there at the corner of the bar at McManus that my life changed completely. Were you looking for a collaborator?
You know, maybe I didn't know I was. Mm. I was still very new in this community in New York. That I had just been telling you, it's like now when you look at that community and who sort of sprouted out of it, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I think I was looking for collaborators.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was looking for sort of my person in that way at the time. Yeah, it felt like that. Alana and I met on an improv practice group. So when you
you gotta share what that is.
Yeah, it's fascinating. lean in. So basically, the UCB and a lot of these other improv theaters around the country that sort of people have come out of, you're ultimately trying to get on in a group to play on stage. You want to be in a show that's like on the main stage. And before you can do that, you really have to practice. And so all these little practice groups were formed of friends that came out of classes, and we would perform at little theaters around town that we would pay for and like host shows. And it'd be like three or four improv teams, and we'd hand out shots to the audience, and it would be like some of the shows were free, and it was just like hustling.
Yeah.
It was like hustling to perform and to like work this muscle.
Yeah.
Because really good improv is done by people who sort of like have worked at it,
right,
so that when they get out on stage, they're not thinking about it, which is so, and I write about this in the book, which is like exactly the opposite of what I experienced at Atlantic, which was like so in my head.
Right.
And suddenly I found this place that was all about getting to a point where you are like not even in your head at all. You're operating pure gut, pure instinct with a group of collaborators.
Yeah.
And I guess that was ultimately like what I was yearning for. And I had been on this team for a couple weeks, and my friend Tim Martin invited these two new people he met in a class to the team, Alana Glazer and her brother Elliot Glazer. Mm-hmm. And I thought that Alana was Alia Shawkat from Arrested Development, because they look very much alike.
Yeah.
And I was like, that makes sense that she would be on this. Like, she's moved to New York. I don't know. And then went to McManus, as I wrote about. And I'm sitting at the bar, and she's telling me, I didn't know Alia's name, so I thought it was Alana.
Yeah.
And she's telling me about how she grew up on Long Island, and we actually had figured out that two of my best friends from MICA, she knew.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is not Alia. Like, there's no way. And then I fell in love with her. When you fall in love with a friend.
Yeah.
Because she was so, I mean, if you've ever watched our show, which all of you are going to after.
Yeah. There's a binge session that we're hosting next room.
Yeah.
You're going to miss the rest of the conference.
Virtual reality, Broad City. There's an immersive experience.
Okay.
Honestly,
ideas.
Next year, get in touch with me.
Yeah.
We can do that. It'll just be me in the room.
You live. There's actually no goggles. It's just you and Alana live doing Broad City.
But where was I? Just the
meeting Alana, you fell in love
as a friend. Yeah, and she was so, if you see, you know, we play amplified versions of ourselves on the show. And when you get to meet Alana even in the show, you're just, I don't think you would have not met anyone like her either.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this person makes me different.
Yeah.
And that's
What's it like playing an amplified version of yourself? Because I think in your book, you I just want to make sure I'm quoting it correctly, but you say that it was like there was a good and bad to naming your character Abby. You play Abby Abrams, you are Abby Jacobson. What was navigating the relationship between the two of them like?
Yeah, I mean, the amplifiedness of playing that character was incredible. Abby, unlike the version you're seeing right now, super insecure, super, just very rambly.
No.
I like that. I'm just like hearing my joke I just said out loud I'm doing it. But just very sort of, all the emotions are sort of like outward, like scrambly and rambly and just desperately trying to like figure everything out, which I am too. I showed the feelings more, I think, than I usually tend to do, which was incredible to do that. I really grew up on the show. I mean, we started doing the web series in 2009 and stopped doing the TV show in 2019. Is that right? Which was 20 years ago now. But you know, there was a big period of my life, and the negative, I wouldn't even call it bad, but the negative is sort of like, it's the most, and I write about this too, it's like the most flattering thing, I think, that people that really found something in the show feel like they really know me.
Right.
Because it is so much me.
Right.
But then it is also like not. So it's like this weird mirror. Mm. And it's sort of also made me kind of have to figure out myself all over again or
right,
something.
Right, right. You're seeing this like other, it's like a part of you, but it's not all of you.
Yes.
And you're seeing her, but she's also like trapped in Amber from this time of your life where you wrote her.
Yeah. But I'm so happy we went with our names. That,
yeah.
I mean, I was almost Carly.
Oh, okay.
That would have never worked.
Yeah, ever. You guys, you'll know it when you get the VR experience of Broad City.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to two things. So one, right before and then during Broad City, when you're talking about like doing all of that improv, what you're getting out of that, and as you said, like to get good at improv, you just have to do it all the time, over and over. And this is, I would say, true for every art form,
yes.
right? But, you know, the privilege you get with that is you get to experience a lot of failure. How is failure involved in your creative process?
Oh, that's a good question.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm, that's a good one.
Don't answer it, we'll move on. I just want the compliment.
Next.
Yeah,
next. I think that it improv was a really good base for me in the way in which I create now, which is I think I like showing the flaws, especially in the books I've made. I some of them were full illustrated books and some had illustrations in them, and I started really loving the idea of you're seeing every time I mess up.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. Like the drawing is drawing, you're seeing where I like kinda fucked up the hands over here. And I'm so sorry, is that the first time I curse, and am I not supposed to do that?
No, it's okay. We
Great.
Can bleep and
Great.
Fuck. Yeah.
Okay. I'm surprised it took me that long. But I like showing the flaws, and I like seeing the process.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think it's all part of it. Like, especially the writing of a show. I love Broad City, and I love what we put out into the world, but we messed up a lot, too, and we did things the wrong way, whether it was like stuff you guys never saw on the show running part of it, and like, you know, running a lot of people working on a thing,
you are
inevitably going to make mistakes and learn from them. And I think that is all part of the creative process and learning from them and trying to acknowledge it and make it better the next time.
Yeah.
And sometimes the failing, and it makes it like open something up in a whole new way in a writer's room or something.
Right.
I can't think of a really good example.
No, I get what you're saying. It's just that with improv, the failure is more public or public for the audience members who are there for the shots that you hand them.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I think, yes, the improv is public for the, like, depending on where you're performing improv, it could be like 20 people.
Yeah.
No, but there's definitely more public failures I've experienced more recently that I think you have to just look at them and try and do better the next time.
Whereas,
and the same thing in comedy, maybe not as with a serious eye, but kind of is, if the goal is laughter and feeling and it's quiet, then you gotta figure out how to,
it's like a faster learning process.
It's very quick,
because there's like that immediate metric. But with improv, the failure is like, oh, I just, it was, that scene was a total dud, it's now wiped, we're on to the next
show. that is the greatest part about it, is like you have to sort of move past it.
Right.
Hi, I'm Debbie Millman. Canva is great for designing visual content for work, no matter what industry or department you work in. Nail your next presentation with Canva Presentations. Start with a professionally designed template and use it as a springboard for your design. It's a serious time saver. Time to present but can't be there in person? Enter Canva Talking Presentations. Record yourself presenting and add your talking head to your slides so your audience can watch your perfected presentation anywhere, anytime. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work.
Hey, y'all, it's Elise. I have another podcast to tell you about. It's called In the Making. It's an original podcast brought to you by Adobe Express. It's the all-in-one content creation app included in your Creative Cloud membership. In the Making takes an honest look at the challenges and rewards of being part of the creator economy. The series kicks off with Puno, who is a creative director and educator. On the show, host Teresa Au explores how you can use the principles of design to create a career you love. Puno did it. Puno is a web designer and content creator and the founder of an online education platform called I Love Creatives. And on the show, Puno shares her journey from working on the Call of Duty video game to building both a design studio and a trade school for digital design. Puno has practical advice for taking a thoughtful and iterative approach to career building. Most importantly, this show is actionable. It's about how you can take your own next step in the creative world and into the creator economy. It'll help you discover creative, intriguing people who are making a living, and it'll probably inspire you no matter what you do. I know it certainly did for me. Search for In the Making in your podcast player. My thanks to In the Making and Adobe Express for their support.
So about Broad City, the show, going back to like the era you were in, you know, I just said what's very true for me, like you guys were such a beacon of hope to so many of us who were like, I also want to have a career in this world, maybe not even in comedy, just like I want to make stuff. And YouTube presented, you were part of this era of YouTube where Issa Rae was making The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl, that turned into the HBO show Insecure.
Yep.
Lena Dunham had been doing a lot of stuff on YouTube that was always referenced every time, you know, Tiny Furniture, her first feature, was talked about. So YouTube felt like this, like, we're gonna get past the gatekeepers.
Yeah.
Were you conscious of that when you guys made Broad City? Because Broad City started as a YouTube series, then went to television. Were you conscious of that, or were you just like, we just want a space to make our work?
We were both on these teams and taking classes at the theater, trying to get on the stage.
Yeah.
And we sort of felt in hanging out, and whenever we stepped out together,
yeah,
that dynamic was so unique and
yeah,
kind of had legs to it. And we just made each other laugh so much that, and we could not get on these teams. Like we were auditioning.
Teams. Yeah.
We could just, and we were both auditioning for whatever, but hardly could get on the auditions. And, you know, Alana and I are both not your typical Hollywood look.
Yeah.
You know, also at the UCB, I don't know now, but at the time there was like, if there's a team of eight people, one was a woman.
Right.
And so it would just happen that way somehow.
Yeah.
And so so weird. It's always like that. And it is the world.
Yeah.
And so you just knew that there were this limited number of spots, and we just couldn't get on, couldn't get seen.
Yeah.
But the two of us were, we just kept being like, but we know this is funny.
Yeah.
We know there's something here, even if we're just making it for us.
Right.
Even if we can take just the power back of creating a thing.
Right.
Away from whoever, like, lets you be on stage. And so once we sort of had that conversation, like, what if we made?
Yeah.
Like, we went to a pizza shop and we're like, wait. What if we just make a thing?
Yeah.
And then it was like, we were off to the races. We were, like, we had got all these different collaborators from the community, people that wanted to direct, people that wanted to edit, other actors, and it was so small. We would pay like little bars. I lived in Astoria in Queens, and Alana lived in Park Slope, and we would pay little bars like $50 to shoot in their back little corner for like an hour, stealing stuff on the subway, and it just all of a sudden gave us control.
Yeah.
And the YouTube aspect part of it was like, I'm so not tech savvy. And this was before, like, I never considered myself a YouTuber.
Yeah.
And our web series, like 2,500 people watched our web series.
Right.
Which is not a lot at all. But it was something we could send our parents to prove that we were actually doing comedy.
Yeah.
And it was, we thought it was really good.
Yeah.
Something in it was good. And then we just believed in it and just kept making them.
Yeah.
And so we made 35 of them for like 2 years. And I don't even know what the question was. I'm just going.
No. That was great.
Just going with it.
It was the era of YouTube.
Yeah.
You completely nailed it.
I haven't talked about this in a while.
I love it.
Yeah. And it was so exciting because we would also do like these live shows at different venues, like 92i Tribeca.
Yeah.
RIP. Yeah. But we would do these live shows where we would screen episodes. And I will never forget I just was talking about this in the League of Their Own Writers room. This feeling, we were part of this little film, the short film festival called Iron Mule. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny, Hannibal Buress was like this, just there too, mm-hmm. who was like an old friend of ours who ended up being in the web series and then in the TV show. But we were just part of this little shorts festival. But a photo of us was in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And it was like this teeny photo. And I will never forget taking the subway to work.
Yeah.
And I worked at a job next to Alana at the time.
Yeah.
At a place called Life Booker, which we then used in the show and made
that
her job.
Became,
but I held the New York Times as if everyone on the train knew.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah. They were like,
it
oh
is
my
like
God,
a
that tiny,
teeny,
picture.
Tiny
yeah.
photo of us on Houston
wow.
in front of a mural. And it was like just that feeling of mm-hmm. like anything is possible. Yeah. I don't know. It was very, yeah. it was a really big moment.
Yeah.
And no one had seen it. And it was just like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think that following that feeling, those yeah. little, I don't know where I'm going with that, but
no.
Guess I am like the character, huh?
Just rambling. No, it's perfect. So, in a broader sense of Broad City, is something I loved so much about it, and something that I felt was so fresh, is you have these two women who are always building each other up. Building each other up and are obsessed with each other. And there was like, I remember just breathing this like breath of, it was like a breath of fresh air to watch this and just be like, this feels new, and it's sad that it feels new,
yeah.
and yet it's still new. Was that did you go in with that mindset to be like, we are gonna show the type of female friendships we wanna see, or was it just more organic?
It was more organic.
Yeah.
I think it was just, again, it might have been just, I guess we performed on this improv team for 2 years before we made the show.
Mm.
I met Alana in 2007, right after I was uploading all the TED Talks. And but it was a newer
yeah.
friendship.
Yeah.
It was really based on like just the enthusiasm of being around each other and
yeah.
sort of, we just had a lot of fun together. I don't know if anyone has ever made me laugh like that.
Yeah.
And vice versa, I think. But it was this, and we used like direct things in the show that, it was very organic.
Yeah. I want to talk about the last shot of Broad City, which I got chills when I watched it when it aired. And then this morning, I couldn't access my Hulu account because we're in Canada, so I bought the episode and I watched the end and I got chills.
I got an alert.
You got an alert
that bought, yeah.
someone in Vancouver.
We get paid directly right
yeah,
when
yeah.
you watch the episode.
My $2.99 went right to
yeah.
you. And then we met for the first
yeah.
time right after that. But I just want to say it's a really rare piece of art that can give you the same response that you had when you first saw it, as when you know exactly what you're about to watch and then you watch it again. And I got that feeling in my lovely little Airbnb a few blocks away in Vancouver. And I, whenever I feel that from any piece of work, I just always feel compelled to thank the people who made it. So thank you.
Oh my goodness.
But I want to talk about the last shot because, and this isn't a spoiler, but Alana is on the phone with you, and then she gets off the call, and then she walks down into the Union Square subway station. And so the last shot of Broad City doesn't actually have either of you in it,
no.
but what you see is pairs of friends walking up the stairs, having their own little conversations, and then you pull out, I'm literally getting chills right now,
I am
as
too.
I just
like,
re-narrate to you your last scene. Wow, it's so good. But you just see pairs of friends talking about things they've done the night before. Just you capture these little worlds of friendships, and then you pull out in this like big sweeping crane shot of Union Square, and you see all these friends passing each other. And it, to me, it like spoke so much to like the legacy of the show. How would you define the legacy that you want for the show?
Oh, wow. I haven't quite heard like anyone talk about the show in a second like that. That means so much to me that you felt that way. That is exactly how kind of the intention. I hope the legacy is that whether you have your person or people yet, that they're there. And that what Alana and I had, which I think I, if you watch it and you felt like you, I'm going to go back and figure out how to say this in a succinct way, because I'm like, this is overwhelming to me in a way. It's like that scene was so difficult to come to in a way. How do we end a show? And I'm going to come around to the answer.
Ready.
But we were writing it, and actually Paul W. Downs, who created and is in the show now called Hacks.
Great show.
He wrote on the show the whole 5 seasons of Broad City too. And we're struggling. Paul comes in one morning, he says, I had a vision. And it was that.
Wow.
It was like, we knew we were struggling so much with how to end the Abby and Alana, but we wanted it to end bigger and to feel like you were a part of it.
Yeah.
Like that's always, I guess the legacy, I don't know how to answer the legacy, but I guess we always wanted people to feel like they were hanging out with us.
Yeah.
And like, maybe if you didn't have your Abby or Alana, like you had us.
Yeah.
Or maybe if you did, you can watch it with us.
Right.
And if you're in New York, you get it a little bit more, but wherever you are, you have your own spots and your own hustles and shenanigans that you get up to. So we wanted to end it feeling like you just saw one of millions of these. And maybe if you don't have that yet, you can find it.
Yeah, because I think there can be a sense of loneliness to the city when you don't find your person, when you don't find that person.
Yeah.
And it was just a pleasure to revisit. Deal with it. And congratulations on the $2.99 that is now in your Venmo account.
I wish. That would be great. I get a little alert. Thank you.
You get it.
Yeah.
So you have the rare privilege, you had the rare privilege of deciding to end a television show, which is incredibly rare in this line of work.
I know.
Was it hard to make that decision?
Yeah, it was really difficult. I think that when I watch a show, as much as I love it, you never want it to go, I'm not gonna say a show that I'm talking about, but sometimes it goes a little too long and then you're like, no, I loved it. We never wanted to outstay our welcome.
Yeah.
And we, in the fourth season, we really started, you know, it's mostly episodic. And so you can, for the most part, come into any episode. There is like an arc to it a little bit in the first 3 seasons. But in the fourth season, we really started to dive a little bit more into the two of them kind of growing. Which is so funny because like characters grow, but on a lot of sitcoms the reason they last for 15 years is because they kind of don't change that much, and that's why you can continually do any storyline. And we really wanted to explore them changing. And once we started diving into that, we realized, you know what happens when two friends that are obsessed with each other and love each other so much, what happens when things have to change a little bit? And that made it so much more emotional for us to write it and feel, it just felt really right. And we were contracted for 7 years, and Kent Alterman, who used to run Comedy Central and Viacom, fought for us to end it.
Wow.
Like that doesn't happen.
That's so good.
And then they completely changed their whole thing, but he's not there anymore. He really fought to make it, and he fought to let us end it when we wanted to, which is very, very rare of a TV exec.
I am looking at the time and I'm realizing there's something we have to talk about what you're working on now.
Yeah.
I'm skipping so many of my middle questions. But you are adapting A League of Their Own.
Yeah.
Talk
about... You guys have ever seen that one?
Everyone's like, yeah, we love it.
I'm like, great. Yeah.
What is Broad City? No, so A League of Their Own, 1992 film.
Yep.
About the Women's Baseball League. Mm-hmm. Okay, what drew you to that story?
Okay, so Will Graham, who I created it with, approached me. I was still making Broad City, like 2017. Mm-hmm. And he said, I got this idea. I really would love to make a TV version. Mm. And he said, do you want to do it with me? And I was like, say no to that? And then we talked a lot about what we would do.
Yeah.
And so it is a TV adaptation, but I kind of like to think of it as a reimagining because it's a lot of people's favorite movie. And it's very different.
Right.
The movie's over here.
Yeah.
The movie, you can watch the movie whenever you want.
Yeah.
And the TV show will be over here. And so the movie explores the All-American Girls Baseball League, mm-hmm. which is great. The movie, I love the movie. It's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
As a kid and now. It holds up in a lot of ways. So our reimagining is about, it's sort of like opening up the lens of women in the 1940s that dreamed of playing baseball.
Right.
So it's kind of a two-hander.
Yeah.
I'm one hand.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of what you're used to in the movie, like the All-American Girls League. I go and you will follow my character in that way. And it's also about this character, Max, who's played by Shantae Adams, who's a black woman. Mm. And in the movie, I think you might remember... There's
that one scene.
There's a one scene
where the ball rolls.
The ball rolls, and a black woman picks it up and chucks it back to Gina Davis, and she's like, "Ah, whoa."
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Yeah. And that's intersectional feminism.
Yes.
Yeah. Just a one scene.
You know, and Will and I got the chance to talk to Penny Marshall, who directed the film before she passed away, and we got to ask her all these questions. It wasn't a very long conversation, but you know, she said, you know, I was trying to nod. Mm. I almost did a Penny Marshall impersonation, but I'm not going to do that. But she was like, I was trying to acknowledge all these things. And that was like a really quick acknowledgement that this woman would have been good enough to be on this
league,
but was not allowed.
Yeah.
And so our show is really examining, you know, this league was an incredible space. We still do not have a professional women's Major League Baseball team now. Mm. This is the only time in history that ever happened. And our show is examining, well, for a lot of people, for a lot of women, white women and white passing women, this allowed them to play professional baseball.
Yeah.
But if you were not in that category, you were not allowed in that door.
Yeah.
And Max is roughly based on three women who ended up playing in the Negro Leagues with men.
Mm.
Which is incredible. Mamie Johnson, who went to the tryouts and was not allowed on, Connie Morgan, and Toni Stone. And so our show is not, there's none of the characters from the movie.
Yeah.
But there's, it still, I think, has the spirit of the movie, but it's touching on a lot of things that the movie doesn't, like race, and believe it or not, there's some queer women playing professional baseball.
Yeah.
I guess in the 90s, they weren't aware.
No. Queerness was invented after that.
But the show is pretty queer.
Yeah. It's exciting. I mean, let's just talk about it. There is an inherent queerness that a lot of people read on to the movie, A League of Their Own.
Yes, but no, yeah.
It's like, so gay.
It is kind of a iconically gay movie.
Yeah.
But no one's gay.
No one's gay.
I mean... Not even Rosie.
I know. Rosie wasn't even out yet.
I think she was, or maybe she wasn't publicly.
I think she came out in the late 90s, not publicly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got a chance to talk to her too about it. Maybe it wasn't, I didn't know when she publicly came out, but she was definitely like.
Yeah.
Every, you know, but
a
she was like.
A practicing queer.
Yeah.
Exactly.
let's make sure the data's right in her Wikipedia.
We'll fact check that. when did it start for you? That's what I'll ask Rosie personally.
Abby Jacobson said that you were...
No, I'll get thrown under the bus for that one. There is a queerness. So what, if you're comfortable talking about it, I mean, you kind of publicly came out through, if my research led me correctly, through a kind of weird interview with a journalist?
I think that would, it was a really weird interview. Yeah. And my Abby Abrams came out because I was like, what? Yeah, I think it's so interesting, whatever. Like that queer people like have to publicly come out. Yeah. Like this is an obvious statement, but like I hate that like straight people don't have to say a fucking thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was kind of a big outlet. It was Vanity Fair. I think I was promoting the book.
Six Balloons?
No, Six Balloons. Yeah. It definitely would have been the book because the book is all about that. That's so funny. Yeah. It was for Six Balloons, which is this film I was doing. And she goes, you're such a catch. Like, why are you single? Like, what kind of guy are you into? I don't get it. And I was like, oh, like it was not a secret to me at all, but I also wasn't going to like tweet it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I don't know. That just didn't feel like my vibe. And I stumbled through making sure she knew I was queer on the phone. And then in the article, it appears I was stumbling through it, but I was just relieved that I don't know. It was
but it wasn't a secret. Like you were I want to be honest about this, but it's not like I don't want this to be a coming out, but you understand how media works too.
Not at all. And I also the way she even phrased it, I was like, "Oh, this is not a thing that's known."
Mm.
Even though I like Rosie, I was practicing. So okay, I think that's correct in my Wikipedia. So no one needs to go on it.
I'll be editing it today.
Yeah. But I don't know what, I just was like, well, I have to correct this person because this is incorrect.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that I am a catch, but
correct that.
Yeah. But it was clumsy.
I was trying to formulate this question, but like you're totally right that I think this whole notion and performance of coming out is kind of bizarre. I think, you know, like I came out at 18, which was so like I had a very Ryan Murphy coming out. You know, it's a like, mom, dad, I'm gay, you know, and they're like, we know, and then everyone was like crying. And I think like that changes, like 2006 is recent, but it feels like a totally different time.
Wait, 2006 was
when I came
out. Okay, I was like, wait,
You, I'm telling you, no.
Yeah, 2006.
I came out in 2006 and it just feels so different, meaning what you're articulating is, I think, the prevailing feeling of like, I don't want to come out, I'm just queer. Like,
I just didn't feel like I needed to make some sort of announcement. Yeah. I was so old.
Yeah.
Like it was like, I was, not that that has anything to do with the announcement, I just like sort of realized this about myself pretty late.
Mm.
And once I did, I was very much open about it. I mean, it's in everything I make.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, and I don't know. I mean, it was sort of like kind of right that it happened that way. I was like, oh, you don't know Vanity Fair.
Yeah, you got to educate them. So is queerness consciously woven into A League of Their Own, the new adaptation?
Yeah. Listen, it's about so many other things. Yeah. Like it's like a sports show. And I think it's like such a, it has, I mean, I'll be done in post in like 2 weeks. I'm still very much in it every day. But yes, the queerness is without a doubt woven into it. And I just don't think there are a lot of queer stories from that time period that are shown. And I think they're based on real we did a lot of research for the show. And it was exciting I believe it or not, I didn't do a ton of, we didn't have a research department for Broad City. But yeah, it was a really important part of the show.
Yeah. You're making me realize something too, which is, you know, a lot of the time with the current era of media, when it's like people refer to shows and work as IP, there's a lot of eye rolling, and some of it is valid of like, everything's a reboot these days.
Yeah.
But I think what I'm realizing now talking to is like, there can actually be a beauty to that too, because it's taking these stories, not referring to it as IP, but stories that we all really loved, and saying, okay, but what if you just turn the camera this way? You know, like,
yeah.
What if you, it's this world, we're putting the camera in this world, but we're angling it away a little. So when, I'm just curious about the creative process of taking a known story. From the beginning, you wanted to make sure it wasn't those characters?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm not attempting to
rewrite.
Be Gina Davis.
Yeah.
In any way.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a hilarious thing to me that I don't know why. She's just such a movie star.
Yeah.
No one is the same. There are definitely nods to the movie, because as a lover and a fan of the movie, you also want to see the little nods.
Totally.
But a lot of the nods to the movie are real things that happened in the league.
Yeah.
And so we're going to include them again.
Yeah.
Because we talked to real players and read all this stuff about the league and the era and what like getting into that league was like and the tryouts and all these things. So I think it's a really difficult task, especially when it's people's favorite movie.
Yeah.
But now I'm at the end of it, and I've been really nervous about this for the whole, I started doing this in 2017, and where we are now. And I've been nervous, like, are we going to get this right? Are people going to hate it? And you know, I imagine people are going to watch it like this. Like, oh, let's just see how you ruined my movie.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people might.
Yeah.
And this might not be for them. But I'm at a point right now where I think this is like where you have to be as a creative. I'm really proud of it.
Good.
And I think we made something really different than the movie, and something really good. And I don't know, like, that's so scary to say, but that's like the best you can hope for. And then if it's not received, then I did what I could, you know, I don't know. But I think I feel good about honoring these women's stories.
Yeah, no, you have to, what a gift that you're able, because like, it also, I'm so glad that you're saying this and saying this on the record here.
That I think it's good.
Yeah. No, I mean that, because I think
they're going to be like, she said she thinks good.
You're
when it comes out.
You're going to be memeable. Yeah. And I'm going to be like making some face in the background. No, I think that's such a beautiful thing. And I do love that it's recorded, because I think whenever we put art out into the world, we then average what we feel with what other people say about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I wish we didn't have to do that. Like, you believe in it, you like it. That's so cool.
Yeah, it is cool. I mean, I'm going to be a nervous wreck when it comes out.
Of course.
But
you have
ultimately,
to accept that.
You just got to trust your gut, kind of.
Completely.
Yeah.
For many people who aren't in the television world, TV development is an agonizingly long process.
Yeah.
Agonizingly long. If I understand correctly, you pitched A League of Their Own and sold it in 2017.
Yeah.
Pilot written and shot in 2018, or you wrote the whole season and then you shot a pilot?
We had a development room where we wrote an entire season. It was originally going to be a half-hour comedy. Then we got feedback that they wanted us to rework the pilot. Will and I rewrote the pilot now. And I'm actually very happy that that happened. The show changed a lot.
Yeah.
And I was waiting to officially be in it. I don't know why. I think I was still in Broad City and I was like, do I want to do this? And I kind of was waiting until I loved her. And we were working on it for so long. And then finally we rewrote the pilot. And then I sort of fell in love with the character. My character's name is Carson. And then we shot the new pilot in February of 2020. So right before COVID. Yeah. And then we wrote...
So you wrapped?
The pilot.
Right, you wrapped the pilot, you wrapped production, and then you were in the edit.
I was editing when they were like, we need to leave the facility. Yeah,
wow.
In person. And then we edited remotely, and then we got picked up, and then we wrote season one again, now as an hour-long dramedy.
Yeah.
All on Zoom in 2020 and 2021. Shot it. Where are we? We shot it in Wishat in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
This summer.
Yeah.
Last summer.
Yeah, 2021.
Yeah. And I'm still in post on it.
And then it's coming out this year.
It comes out this summer.
Wow. So it's a long process. That's going to be 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, we talked about failure.
Good thing I like it, right?
Yeah. Thank God. We talked about failure and how that applies to TV. But I think the other interesting thing about improv is that improv is don't think. Don't think, just do, right? Like build it, tear it down, don't think about it. That is antithetical to the TV development process, which is like think constantly.
Yeah.
This executive in a faraway tower on a lot somewhere is telling you, I don't feel emotion from this. And you have to like constantly be thinking, how do you keep that? I guess it's a similar question, but how do you keep that freshness of the improv spirit as you are spending hours on a line?
I think it's also like, I feel like it's like a hustle energy of improv of like, okay, then I'll try this.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm always gonna try this. And even in like a writer's room, when I hire a writer, my favorite kind of writer is someone who is going to be like, okay, that didn't work. What about this? Like someone who's gonna keep coming with ideas. And listen, sometimes I'm the worst where I'm like, I don't know, like negating.
Yeah.
You kind of always are like, okay, maybe not that, but then what else? Like ending is like big rule of comedy and improv. Like yes or no, but also maybe this, like adding upon. And I think in production, where like you need writing and production of television, things change so much. Like this, the production of this show, every single thing that could have gone wrong went wrong. And it was a constant, okay, we have to rewrite this scene to be shot tomorrow. This is. It's raining. Did you guys know that it rains more in Pittsburgh than almost anywhere in the United States?
Well,
because I didn't.
And you learned.
And we're shooting a show about a baseball.
All indoors. All the indoor fields.
It was
fields,
just sort of like, what do we do? Like, we got to move this here. We got to like shoot here. Maybe they're not in it. Like I still feel that muscle is constantly being worked out because you have to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah.
And so even though the writing process is so thorough and sort of feels never ending, it's like, there's another whole stage where like that's done. And now you're like, taking the writing and you're like having to make this other thing work. And then you shot it all and we're never going back there right now to reshoot. So we're in Screenville and we have to make what we got work in the edit. And that's like a whole other like, okay, well, what if we recut it like this? Or like, let's really bring in a cue. Like there, it's like never ending sort of like obstacle course you're on.
And you, just with your description, it's also like the writing doesn't end. You know, like I have rewritten in the edit because
you have to.
Yeah.
Even if you get exactly what you want, sometimes you're like, oh, it's not, that doesn't work the way I thought it would.
And it's mystifying that something that can kill in the room, kill on set, falls flat in the edit. And so... I think the writing process kind of doesn't end at the room, right? It's like, it's on and on and on.
The editors that I've worked with are, I mean, they're writing.
Mm-hmm. Completely.
You have to like rework a whole scene sometimes.
Yeah.
So.
All together.
Yeah.
I know you're working on your fantasy project now. This was a dream project for you. And Broad City was a fantasy project. But I'm just curious, and I encourage you to just go wild with this answer, but what is your absolute, what's an absolute fantasy project you have?
Okay, I have two things.
I want them both.
Here we go. One, I have not made, I've done books where I made artwork, but they never felt like actually the like art I wanna make. Mm. They always were in book form, they're very small. I've been talking about this for years. I want to paint again so badly. That, and this project that I've been trying to work on is adapting this short story that I can't say what it is because I'm trying to get the rights so bad.
Can I list some names? No, I won't do that.
I don't know if she... Maybe it'd be helpful. Or should I look into a camera and plead? I really want to write a film.
Yeah.
And direct it.
Mm.
Based and not on be these in it.
Short stories.
I don't want to be in it.
Based on these short stories?
Just one short story.
Wow. Okay. I'm ready to...
And it's like an older short story, and I read it during COVID, and I sort of couldn't stop thinking about it.
Mm.
And that's really what I would love to do. And I haven't worked on a piece of writing by myself in a number of years, and that's sort of what I'm longing to do. I love a collaborative experience, but I would love to do something on... Both of those things are pretty solo.
Okay. That's exciting.
Yeah.
I can't wait for both. Well, Abby, thank you so much.
My goodness. Thank you so much.
I know. This just sped by. Thank you all so much for being here. Thank you to our TED members for watching. Thank you, Debbie, for watching.
Debbie.
We love you. We hope Design Matters was in good hands just for these 90 minutes. And once again, Abby Jacobson.
Thank you all so much.
That was Abby Jacobson in conversation with Dylan Marin at the TED 2022 conference in Vancouver. I hope to interview both of them separately in the near future. This is the 18th year we've been podcasting Design Matters, and I'd like to thank you for listening. And remember, we can talk about making a difference, we can make a difference, or we can do both. I'm Debbie Millman, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Design Matters is produced for the TED Audio Collective by Curtis Fox Productions. Interviews are usually recorded at the School of Visual Arts Masters in Branding program in New York City, the first and longest-running branding program in the world. The editor-in-chief of Design Matters Media is Emily Weiland.
You're growing a business, and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate, no coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.